This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, episode 48. 48 of these things now, rapidly approaching the big 5-0. My name is Tom and I'm joined, as ever, by one of my main co-hosts. His name is Ross O'Reilly. Hi, Ross.
Hello, good day.
Good day. How's it going?
Not too bad. Yeah, I'm very ill-prepared for this, to be honest. I was playing Resident Evil all day, and then I just got to... Well, Resident Evil 7, I just got to the final boss, and then realised, oh, what's the time? And I looked, it was like five minutes to six. I was like, oh, shit, I've got a podcast, so...
It's not like It's not like you to be unprepared, Ross, I must say.
I know, it's very unlike me, isn't it?
That said, obviously the clocks went forward here in the UK last night, and I assumed that the time would have been different from what we originally... planned, so there was a bit of a last minute dash to the laptop to get everything up and running. However, it's all fine now. We're here and you're listening to our podcast. We do have a very special guest. His name is Jamie. He is the proprietor of a well-known Dreamcast fan site, quite like the Dreamcast Junkyard, but it's called Dreamcast Gaga or DC Gaga. Welcome, Jamie. Welcome to the podcast.
Konnichiwa. Hello there.
Konnichiwa indeed. And that is very appropriate because you are actually located on the Fair Isle of Japan, just like Ross.
That's right, yeah. I'm a bit further south than him. I'm on the island of Kyushu.
Ah, right. So you're both on different islands then, yeah?
We are.
Oh, yeah. It's only about, what, it's probably less, well, an hour and a half? Well, probably 1 hour by Shinkansen, I guess, isn't it? It's not that far at all.
Yeah, it's not that far, but yeah, we are on different islands at the moment.
It's interesting because you kind of forget that Japan is kind of like an archipelago, isn't it? It's like a collection of islands that are like linked, I guess, by what, like ferries and things or bridges or what?
It's basically like bridges, like, you know, from France to England, kind of similar.
That'd be a big bridge.
Yeah. Although that's an underwater tunnel, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's very nice to have you on the show, Jamie. And obviously, I've been reading DC Gaga for quite some time because there's quite a lot of interesting information on there that we've probably not even covered on the Dreamcast Junkyard. And yeah, it's a good source of interesting information. We will come back and talk about your site and your experiences in Japan in a while. But first of all, we'll do what we always do, and we'll have a quick little chat about things that we might have been playing or things that we've picked up. Ross, I'll come to you first. What have you been playing? You did mention Resident Evil.
Well, yeah, Resident Evil 7 really is all I've got on my mind right now. And yes, great game. It's weird. I played it for like an hour at first, and it was just too intense for me. I had to stop, and I didn't play it again for a couple of weeks. And I picked it up again, and I could only play it for an hour because it was too intense. And then this morning, I just put it back on again, and I was like, right, I'm going to get through this today. And yeah, I've just been playing it for like 3 or 4 hours straight.
Are you playing in VR?
No, it's only VR on PSVR.
Have you got the PC version then?
Yeah, I've got the PC version, yeah.
Right, I see, yeah.
I'm playing in 2K, actually.
unfortunately,
it doesn't support Crossfire, so I can't. It can't really do 4K at 60 FPS, so I'm having to be a bit of a peasant and lower it down to 2K.
A peasant?
it's unbearable, honestly. My eyes are bleeding.
anything on retro systems or just Resident Evil?
No, really, just Resident Evil, yeah. But this weekend, anyway.
Yeah. What about the new 2D fighting game from Visco on the Dreamcast? Have you been playing that?
Breakers, I did play it a little bit, yeah, for the review. Yeah, I'm not too impressed, to be honest. I mean, yeah, it's great they're making a new Dreamcast game in 2017, but really all it is a ROM of the Neo Geo CD version running on a Dreamcast emulator, well, a Neo Geo emulator for the Dreamcast that we've had already for, what, how many years has that been out? Like 10 years? A long time, yeah. Yeah, I've got a Neo Geo MVS and cabinet in my apartment here, and I compared them both, and it's night and day. The MVS version is just so much smoother. And I think, well, not, I don't think, I know, you'll get a better experience playing it on MAME for free, so I don't really see the point personally. I mean, I think it's one for the, like, collectors, but
yeah,
for like people who just want to play the game, I can't really see the point when it's just better on MAME anyway. Like, considerably better.
Cool. Okay, well...
What did you think of it then?
Personally, I thought it was actually quite good. And the reason for that is that I don't have a Neo Geo MVS or an AES. I do have a Neo Geo CD, but I don't have that game. Hmm. And so I didn't have anything to compare it to. And so I basically played the Dreamcast version as a, you know, as a new, as a breaker's virgin, shall we say. And I found it to be quite good. I found it to be quite enjoyable. But like you say, because you've got the original to compare it to, then, you know, you're going to be able to see the differences, whereas I didn't really have that. So, but yeah, I still think it's very, very playable and quite a good game.
The game itself, I think, is fairly good. It's not like, it's not by no means like a classic in the genre, but it's not a terrible effort. It's a pretty good game.
Yeah,
it's good fun. The characters are they're, it's a complete ripoff of Street Fighter 2, to be honest. Like every character, like even though I'd never played it before, as soon as I went in, I just like played, like tried a few moves, and I was like, okay, this character's Ryu. Now I know what I've got to do. And then another character, oh, okay, this is the Chinese version of Guile. Okay, so yeah. I know how to play him. It's a complete ripoff of Street Fighter 2, but Street Fighter 2 is a good game, and so it's still fun.
Well,
it's a good
game. They do say that, was it, imitation is the best form of flattery, so there you go. Anyway, let's move on. Jamie, you're our guest, so I'll let you go next. What have you been playing? Anything on the current systems or on retro? It doesn't have to be Dreamcast alone. It could be all kinds of things.
Okay, yeah. First I'll go with retro. I've been playing... Millennium Racer obviously came out recently, I think we'll get into that later on. But I've been playing that a little bit. Also been playing Capcom versus SNK. I started up a challenge on the site, so I've been trying to put some practice into that, seeing how high I can get my GPS points.
Yeah.
And more modern, I've been playing Not a Hero on PlayStation 4.
I don't know if you know
that game, but
yeah, it's a great game.
It's one of the free games that came out with the Plus subscription recently, and I've been loving that. Such a good game. And I just completed Uncharted 4 as well, which was kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Great ending on that game.
The story was really good. I enjoyed it.
I almost felt like crying when I finished that game. It was that powerful, the ending. It was amazing.
A few of my friends have got Uncharted 4, and I bought it recently. But I bought Yakuza 0, so I've been caning Yakuza 0, and I'll complete Yakuza 0 before I start it. But like a couple of my like close mates who loved the Uncharted series, they both said to me that it wasn't as good as like 2 or 3, and they weren't big fans.
Gameplay-wise, I'll agree with that. I actually enjoyed Uncharted 2 a lot more. The story in the fourth game was, I thought, really good. And like you said, the ending just kind of clinched the deal for me. It was a really good game.
Just put a nice bow on the whole series, didn't it? You know, just like tied everything up at the end. It was really, really good, really well done. I did actually play all of the other Uncharted games before playing 4. I got the Nathan Drake collection on the PS4.
Yeah.
Just because I wanted to see what all the hoo-ha was about, because it completely passed me by. Everything on the PS3 passed me by, because I was an Xbox 360 fanboy back then. So I wanted to play through the originals, and I was just blown away by how... I mean, they look good because the HD remasters, but they must have been even more mind-blowing back in the PS3 days on the actual original hardware. But yeah, they were fantastic games. I loved them all.
The one thing with that series I've never understood, though, is, for example, in the fourth, in all of the games, where you're jumping, you're climbing these huge mountains, and you get right to the top, and then there's an army of goons who have somehow managed to climb the same pitfalls. How the hell do they get up there?
Oh, you go into a tomb that's not been like uncovered for like 1,000 years, and it's just full of like lit candles, and then all of a sudden the goons are there as well. It's like, hey. What? Like, did you see that GIF? And it wasn't a GIF. It was like an image that went viral on social media a few months. I think it was either a couple of months ago or a couple of years ago, where there was somebody had made this image of the imps from Doom. One of them going around with this thing, like lighting all the candles in Doom, because you walk around, there's just like lit candles everywhere in the later levels. Like, who's lighting all these candles? It's just this like imp like tiptoeing around, lighting the candles up. Pretty funny. Cool. Anything else you've been playing?
That's about it for me, really. I've been putting like a lot of time in Not a Hero, trying to complete all of the objectives and that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay. For me, I've been playing a little bit of Not a Hero. I do like the sort of the goriness and the language that's used in the game.
The British humour is great in that.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed that the PS Vita version was cancelled because I'm a bit of a Vita fan, so I was looking forward to playing that on there. But when it was like withdrawn, I was just like, oh, that's a bit of a shame. Still a good game, though. On the current gen systems, I have been playing Grand Theft Auto 5. I know it's about 3 years old now, but I never played it on the Xbox 360, and I waited until now to get it on the PS4 because it's always been so expensive. But they had a deal on in Asda for like £20, so I got it, and I've just been ploughing all my time into that recently on the current gen systems. Retro wise, again, like yourself, Jamie, I've been playing a lot of Millennium Racer because it's actually a really good game, you know. And as you say, we will speak about that in a little while. Apart from that, though, on the retro systems, not really been playing a lot, to be honest. I did get the old Retron 5 out the other day and played a little bit of Streets of Rage 2. And I did make a pickup. It's not an amazing pickup, but it's something nonetheless. It's actually a box, just a box for a Dreamcast broadband adapter. Somebody was selling one on Twitter for like the cost of postage alone. So I was like, oh, I'll have that. It looked nice on a shelf, even though it's not got a actual broadband adapter in the box. On the subject of adapters and the internet and that kind of thing with the Dreamcast, did you see recently the story that we ran on the Dreamcast Junkyard about the fact that you can still dial up to dial-up service using your 33K or 56K modem?
I've seen that as well.
It's just fantastic. It was a guy called Sammy, his name was, on the Facebook group. He basically uploaded a video to YouTube and I kind of turned it into an article. And for those people who haven't seen it, basically, if you go to on the internet and just type in free ISP details, you can get the dial-up number and the login details for whichever ISP it is that you want. And then if you use Dream Key 3 in your Dreamcast, because you can put your own ISP details in, you can still dial up to the internet. It's very slow and everything looks like shit, so there's probably no point, but it's quite interesting. And it's also a good way to get downloads onto your VMU for various different games that have VMU saves hosted online still, one of which is something we're going to talk about in a little while.
It's most of those you can still download from game FNQs, can't you?
Yeah, I think...
That is a very basic web page, so it might not be quite so unbearable loading it up compared to newer stuff, because that website is basically just all text anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you still get online with your Dreamcast. Anyway, we're going off topic. Let's bring it back round, and let's focus squarely on you, Jamie. You're our guest this week, and we want to discuss your website, DC Gaga, or Dreamcast Gaga, and basically your decision to move from the UK to Japan and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, for those people who have never heard of DC Gaga or don't know who you are, if you'd just like to explain like what your site is and who you are, fire away.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so Dreamcast Gaga, it can be found dreamcastgaga.blogspot.com or just searching for DC Gaga on the internet. It's a site I made around 5-6 years ago. I just noticed my collection was expanding of Dreamcast stuff, and I just wanted to blog about the games, especially Japanese, because there wasn't that much info on the internet. So I started blogging, and then the more I looked into it, there was more information about the Japanese kind of side of the Dreamcast that wasn't really available in English, and I wanted to put some of that on the internet as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of grew from there, and that's basically what happened with Dreamcast Gaga, and it's going strong today. I have a store where people can get in contact, and just if they're looking for any games, I can help source it in Japan.
Yeah.
So we do that as well, and I'm trying to put out some few YouTube videos at the moment as well, just kind of looking at some of the more Japanese orientated side of the Dreamcast.
It's interesting you say that because about the Japanese side of things, because obviously there's a lot of stuff in English about like the PAL stuff and the American side of things, and we've also tried to sort of maybe take a little bit of a diversion into like the more obscure Japanese stuff, obviously through Ross, who is based over in Japan. But there's so much stuff. It's like a rabbit hole, the Japanese Dreamcast collecting scene. There's so many games that were never released anywhere else, or there's even entire genres like the dating sims, which were never actually popular anywhere else. So yeah. It is a massive part. It's like you've got the Western side of the Dreamcast is like the tip of the iceberg, and then underneath the surface is this massive expanse of like all this other stuff, which is like basically completely Japanese-centric. You know, even stuff that I didn't even know about until a couple of weeks ago, like that free DC thing, you know, where you could get a free Dreamcast if you signed up to a certain internet provider. And
that's right.
It's
yeah.
just so much really cool stuff over that was only ever released in Japan. And as you say, it's never really been documented, especially in English. There's so much stuff about, you know, the Dreamcast system, or Dreamcast, you know, the online portion of the Dreamcast in Japan, that it's not documented. It's like, it's kind of been lost to the internet, you know, the past, even on like the Wayback Machine, it's either in Japanese or the pages aren't there anymore. So I think it's great to have a source like what you're doing, where you're trying to, get all this Japanese centric stuff and kind of present that in a way that people who don't speak Japanese can enjoy it.
It's interesting, the contrast, because we know the Mega Drive was really popular in Europe and the US, but it wasn't so in Japan. And then for some reason the Saturn, well, for various reasons, but the Saturn was really popular in Japan and not so much in the West. And then you've got the Dreamcast, which kind of equally as popular in Japan as it was in the West, but it was, you know, Sega knew that they were on the way out and they just went crazy with the Dreamcast, especially in Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, they just went, fuck it, and they just started making everything that they wanted to. That's why it's just so interesting to collect for.
Yeah, I totally agree. For a system that I was trying to think of like a sort of a really good comparison. So another system that I'm for some reason a fan of, you probably know this already, is the Atari Jaguar, and that was a massive failure as a you know a system, both commercially and in some ways critically as well, because a lot of the games are actually rubbish. But when you compare the two, as you know, in air quotes, failed consoles, you look at the Jaguar and you can kind of see why it failed. It had very few games. There's not a lot of like merchandise or anything. There is merchandise, but there's not a lot. But when you compare that to the Dreamcast, the amount of stuff is absolutely mind-blowing. Even compared to other consoles like the GameCube or the PS2, the amount of stuff and merchandise and one-off cool items that was produced, it was like Sega literally threw the kitchen sink at the Dreamcast, and it still failed. And a lot of this stuff is basically only really concentrated in Japan. You know, there's so much cool stuff. You know, I'm forever like looking at like Twitter and like all these random Japanese accounts. I can't read what they're saying. You know, I can use the translate button, and it's still really bad translation. But the amount of cool stuff, I see it and I'll retweet it because it just looks amazing and I've never seen it before. I'm curious to ask as well. This is probably a question for both of you. In Japan, do you get, obviously over here, the people are fascinated by Japanese culture and like games and things like that. And it's like seen as quite cool to be into that kind of like import scene, or it certainly was at the time of like the Dreamcast, etc. Does it go the other way? Are people in Japan like, you know, collectors of like PAL stuff or American stuff? Have you seen that? Is that a thing that happened?
That's something that has started in the last five years or so. There's quite a big import scene, especially in Tokyo. It's you can easily access like Western games, especially shooters and games like that aren't typical genres in Japan.
Yeah.
There's a big following of that. It is a hardcore market. It's not the mainstream, but you do see import stores that are appealing not to Westerners now, but to Japanese. I don't know where Ross is. I don't know if that's a similar kind of trend there as well.
Yeah, well, like you say, it's a niche. It's by no means like normal, but in a few of the bigger shops, they'll have an import corner, and it'll be all, it's mostly American games. I've personally never seen PAL for sale in Japan, but if you go on Yahoo Auctions as well, there's a number of sellers selling mostly titles that didn't get a release here for various consoles. They're usually the American version from what I've seen.
I've got this image of like going down to like Akihabara or something like that, and there's like a little shop down an alleyway, and you go in, it's like, oh, you want the special stuff, and it's got this like big cabinet of like PAL Dreamcast games with broken hinges and stuff. Like,
well, you can still there are a lot of shops now, such as a famous retro game shop called Trader in Tokyo, that they stock, you know, the American and occasionally some PAL Dreamcast games as well as Japanese ones. So you know, games that weren't released in Japan for the Dreamcast, you know, people will try and pick up the Western version.
Jamie, let's talk a little bit about like your kind of journey from here in the UK to Japan. Like, when did you like move over there?
So I originally came to Japan in 2002. I came for the World Cup for the football, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was 18 at the time and I just came. I was interested in Japan. One of the things that got me really wanting to visit Japan, the World Cup was kind of the clincher, but the official Dreamcast magazine, I think it was issue one, they had a feature on Japan, and there was all these little features on different cities in Japan and how people were reacting to the Dreamcast. And there was a page on Shibuya and Sentagai. Shibuya is like the kind of fashionable area of Tokyo where all the young people kind of hang out. And I was reading that magazine over and over, and it looked cool. And I was like, okay, Dreamcast is coming, the football's coming, I'm going. And I went to Japan and fell in love with it. And and then I ended up studying Japanese at university, and I'm still here at the moment.
Wow. Cool, yeah. I do have fond memories of the World Cup in Japan, yeah. Weird side note, I was reading up about the World Cup and also the fates of famous footballers who were big in the 1994 World Cup. This is complete tangent and it's nothing to do with the Dreamcast. But yeah, I was reading all about Romário and Bebeto, you know, the two Brazilian footballers from the 94 World Cup. And apparently they both turned to politics after they left football, and they're on opposing sides of the Brazilian government now, which is a bit
Romário was running for president, I think, recently. Yeah,
it's bizarre, isn't it? It's like, how did I not know that? It's fantastic. Anyway, let's get back to the Dreamcast. Ross, I don't know if I've asked you this before, but when did you move to Japan?
I've been here 7 years now. Moved 2010, and March 2010. I almost exactly 7 years now I've been here.
Cool. I wanted to ask you both if there were any kind of things that when you first moved to the country that kind of surprised you. Not like major things, but like, you know, like if you went into like a hotel room and the light switches were upside down or something like that, you know, something that really small and insignificant but you thought was a bit strange or a bit funny. I mean, I don't know if you've got any like little stories about that kind of thing.
Well, there's one thing that a little anecdote I always remember is like, maybe the second or third night I was in Japan, I was at a bar and I went to go to the toilet and I pushed on the door and it was like, it was locked, it didn't open. So I was waiting outside this toilet door for like 5 minutes or longer. And then this other random Japanese guy just came in front of me and it was like a slide door and he just slid the door open and went in front. There was no one even in there. I was like, oh, you dickhead, Ross.
What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, obviously slurping, how Japanese people like to slurp, and that's like a sound of appreciation here. That got me a little bit when I first come. Eating ramen noodles, you make a slurping sound to show you're enjoying it, and because it's so hot. Yeah. But I have an anecdote as well. Swimming at public swimming pools in Japan, I got in the swimming pool in my trunks and I was swimming and the lifeguard comes over and whistles and they say, you need a swimming hat. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't realize. So I get out the pool and I go all the way up to the top, back to the shop to buy a swimming hat. I come down. Now, my head is shaven, but I have a huge beard. So I didn't understand the logic of me putting a swimming hat on my bald head, shaven head, whereas I've got a massive beard. But apparently that's the reason, because the hair clogs up the drainage. But they also have an hourly kind of break. A mandatory break. So every hour the whistle will go and everybody has to get out of the pool for 10 minutes. And this is to ensure that people don't overdo themselves in the pool, that, you know, they have to come out and have a break. Mm. And I found that was crazy when I first come. So everyone has to get out the pool every hour.
See, I've never experienced that because I've never been to a swimming pool here. Ever.
Yeah, well, I've got a tattoo, you have your swimming hat.
Well, I think I can't. I've got a tattoo, so they're all off. Out of limits for me.
Yeah, I have as well. I have to wear what they call lash guards. They're called here, like t-shirts, basically in the pool. Right. And
what? Yeah. So you can't go in the swimming pool? You've got a tattoo.
Yeah, my gym membership. I've had two gym memberships now, and in the contract it says there you're not allowed to have a tattoo. Like, it's in the contract that if it's found out that someone's got a tattoo, then the contract's void, and they can just kick you out of the gym.
That's really bizarre. That's another one that's really kind of hit me. There's a guy in my gym that is completely covered in tattoos. You know, when they've got that many tattoos, they just look green.
Yeah.
There's a guy who looks like that. He'd never get anywhere in Japan, would he? Wow, that's interesting. I wonder what the logic behind that is. Then that's maybe...
it's just the hangover from the mafia, from Yakuza, and sure that people like that don't go to these. To like pools or go to gym, so they just make a rule that anybody with a tattoo can't go.
That's fascinating.
This is, yeah. I've been a member of maybe four gyms in Japan, like in the 7 years I've been there. Three of them were like mainstream gyms. None of them allowed tattoos or anything like that. But one of them was this like dirty back alley gym full of powerlifters and bodybuilders. And there it was totally fine. There were a few guys with tattoos and stuff, but all of the mainstream, like family, or not family, but like normal people gyms, they won't have any of it.
Well, I've not really got any anecdotes as such, but one thing was a bit strange. I remember when I went to Turkey, me and my cousin went to Turkey, and we went into a couple of bars, and it was only after a while that we were stood at the bar and nobody was serving us that we realised that in Turkey, they don't, you don't go to the bar, you have to sit at a table and they come and serve you. I know it's not a major thing, but we just, it seemed totally alien to us, you know, at the time. So yeah, that was a bit of a strange one. Anyway, let's get back to games and Dreamcast games. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Millennium Racer. This is the new game for the Dreamcast that has been discovered on an old dev kit. And yeah, I had no prior knowledge of this game existing, and it looks like nobody else did either. So the story is, if you're not familiar with this, is that a gentleman called Karirin84, obviously his internet username, not his actual name, I would hope. he bought a dev kit, and he doesn't really give much details of where he got it from, but he bought a dev kit and a Dreamcast dev kit, and it had on it some files relating to this particular game. And he gave it to another guy who's got the awesome internet name of Japanese Cake, which is quite fitting considering we're talking a bit about Japan. Yeah, he dug into the files and discovered that, this particular dev kit and these files relate to a hitherto unknown and unmentioned Dreamcast game called Millennium Racer. And Millennium Racer was released for the PC back in 1999, and it's a futuristic racing game where you kind of race on these hover bikes. And yeah, this game was in development for the Dreamcast. It was pretty much complete. And then the developer, Create Studio, just kind of either folded or just didn't release the game. So yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre story. But yeah, now it's been found and released to the internet. And it's really cool. I'm guessing we've all played it.
I haven't, mate. I haven't played it yet. No. Oh, I watched God, your video. Damn you. I watched your video.
Damn you.
I saw it and I was like, actually, it doesn't really look that great. I think I'll pass.
No, mate, it's good. It's really cool. My video is crap because I recorded it using an S video cable because that's the only thing I can get to work properly. We've discussed this in the past. We're not going to go into it now, so don't berate me, okay? And it's actually really good fun. And Jamie, I know you played it because you mentioned earlier on. What were your impressions?
I really liked the soundtrack. I thought it was. I liked the kind of Wipeout vibe that it was going for it. I don't know if it would have come out back in the day. I probably wouldn't have picked it up, but I enjoyed it. And I was just so surprised, like yourself, like a full game like that had just been hiding somewhere and nobody even released it. It was completed and still they hadn't the funds to release it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very odd story that you would have thought that the game's complete, so why not just whack it on a disc and put it out? It's bizarre.
Like I said, game itself, the graphics were okay. I don't think they were doing anything amazing, but I found it very jumpy. You know, you got this cart and very jumpy, and you've got these like tracks above you and tracks below you, and that was kind of cool. But I don't know, it's definitely no Wipeout beater. It's an okay game. Yeah. Back in the day, it'd probably be a 6 or 7 out, maybe a 7 out of 10 game.
Yeah, I do agree with you what you were saying there about it being a bit, because you have to keep like leaping between different sort of like levels, don't you? And
yeah,
that can be initially when you don't really know that's what you can do. It seems a bit like odd because all of the AI vehicles are like jumping up and jumping over things, and you're like, what's this? You know what I mean? What am I playing? You know, I'm playing a racing game.
You get those squares that kind of zoom in on the person in the, you know, the rider in front of you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like on Res or something where it's you're gonna shoot them or something.
Yeah.
But it's just to show, I think, who's in front of you, because there's no guns or anything in the game as far as I can tell. So that was a little bit, I was like, oh, so I'm supposed to shoot him? And then I realized the only real thing you can do is you've got that turbo boost and just kind of speed past them, which was kind of cool.
I thought the same. It would have been cool to have some weapons thrown in as well. I also noted as well that obviously the game's not 100% complete, so that should be kept in mind. But I had issues saving my progress in the championship mode. It wouldn't. It told me that it had saved my progress, and then when I came back to it to carry on with my championship, when I looked in the VMU, it was telling me that there was no save file. I don't know if that was just because I was using the 4-in-1. The official memory card, but it was telling me that it had saved, and then when I went back and tried to reload it, it wouldn't load. So maybe that's something to be aware of as well. But have you tried the multiplayer mode? I've not tried that yet.
I've only actually played it on the emulator at the moment. I haven't burned a copy for my Dreamcast, so I'm still looking to play that in multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's. I should have maybe played it for the video review I did, but I don't actually have any friends, so that would have been a bit hard to get.
Get on the Dream Arena.
Is it two or four players?
It's just two player. Yeah,
two player.
But I would have been interested to see if it had any kind of like drones, you know, that you can race against. There's nothing worse in a two player racing game when you set it all up and then you get out on the racetrack and it's just like you and your friend. Because if like one of you is really good and one of you is crap,
then
you just pull away and you never see the other person. But if it's like other AI vehicles, then that kind of gives the shitter person someone to sort of battle against, which is something that should be in all racing games henceforth, or indeed a multiplayer mode in the first place. I noticed that Drive Club doesn't have like a local multiplayer mode, which was pretty disappointing when me and my mate wanted to play it. Yeah. But yeah, again, I'm going off on a tangent.
That's this gen of gaming for you.
I know, shocking, isn't it?
I did note there was some kind of online components of the game where you could download kind of ghost, what do you call them?
I don't think it's online. I think it's just that when you have set like a best lap, it kind of saves it to your VMU, and then you can basically view the ghost as it goes around the course and see, you know, where it goes kind of thing.
I thought it was like you could possibly download, you know, best times from the internet, you know, someone else's ghosts, maybe that was something that they were planning.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, there's no actual kind of online like components to the game at all. I mean, because I've been, you know, through all the different menus and things had a good look there. But I do like the fact that all the tracks are quite kind of, you know, some of the tracks are very kind of Egyptian-y, you know, like futuristic Egyptian, like Stargate style, like aesthetic to them. I quite like that whole thing. And there's quite a lot of background detail as well in a lot of the courses, like think like monsters, like in different like lava pools and stuff that flies over the track, you know, like indigenous life forms on these like alien planets, which is quite cool. But yeah, for the most part, I thought it was pretty good. And if it had been worked on maybe a little bit longer and released as a full-blown game, then, as you say, Jamie, it probably would have got decent review scores, you know, sevens maybe. It would have been a nice addition to the Dreamcast library, because when you think about it, the only other futuristic racing games, I did mention this in that video review that I did, you've only really got things like Pod 2, and Magforce Racing, which I think are both crap, to be honest. I don't know what you guys think of
those. What was that other game that came out on launch? Was it Trick Style?
I've not played it
in 15 years or something, but I remember when I played it, I really enjoyed it back in the day. I've not played it in years.
Honestly, mate, play it now and wince at the frame rate. It's absolutely terrible. Yeah. In some of the tracks, especially like the London tracks, where you've got these like walkways going on and Big Ben and stuff in the background, it's like a slideshow. It's awful. I know what you mean. It was quite mind-blowing back in the day, wasn't it, when you first saw that playing for the first time?
Yeah, Dreamcast had first launched, you know, there wasn't, for a few months, there wasn't really that, just like all launch all consoles at launch, there wasn't a huge selection of games, so
it was better than the Switch, though, let's be honest.
It gave me something to play for. Oh yeah.
Have you got a Switch, Jamie?
I'm just debating whether to pick one up, actually. I played Zelda on the Wii U, so I don't know if there's anything else really that I want at the moment, but I like the concept. I think the concept's really cool.
That's the only thing that's stopping me really getting one or investigating the possibility of getting one. It's just the fact that I've got The Witcher 3 on the go at the moment. I've got Grand Theft Auto 5 on the go. I don't really want to play another open world game, so that kind of puts Zelda out of the picture for me. And if I did get a Switch, I don't know what else I'd want to play in it, because 1-2 Switch looks like a bag of shit. Yeah. That is the game that I will never, ever pay money for. And the other things, just like, I don't want to play Bomberman on a new £300 console when I can play it on my Retron 5 or my Mega Drive or my Dreamcast, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's not really much else on it.
I think it's an absolute... Well, it's just the worst launch for any console in at least a decade or longer.
In terms of games,
it's just atrocious. I mean, it really bothers me that there are people saying, oh, but it's got Zelda, Zelda's not a Switch game, it's a Wii U game that they artificially delayed so that it could come out for the Switch. It's not anything new. The only reason we're getting that on Switch is because the Wii U was a failure. I just don't get it. I don't get the excitement. And we've got Splatoon 2 that looks like Splatoon 1 with a few extra levels. It doesn't look like a new game to me. Then we've got Mario Kart, which is, again, a Wii U game plus Battle Mode. Now, why isn't Battle Mode going to be a DLC for us people who have a Wii U? They could quite easily do that, but they're not. They're releasing it on the Switch, and they're saying they're sticking their middle finger up to all the people who bought the Wii U, and no one cares. No one's complaining. Like if Sony or Microsoft, if Sony or Microsoft pulled something like that, like imagine if the only game for launch on PS4 was The Last of Us, The Last of Us Remastered. No one would be going crazy for it. It makes no sense to me.
Did you see about the people sending their complaining to Nintendo about dead pixels on the Switch?
Yes,
Nintendo replying that dead pixels are a feature of CRT or those screens. And that they don't deal with it. It's like, cheers, Nintendo.
Yeah, and then people were even defending that. People were defending that, saying, "Oh, that's the same with all monitors." Like, I don't know about you guys, but I've had almost every portable console ever made. I've never had any dead pixels. I think my second-hand PSP had one dead pixel on it, but I didn't buy that new anyway.
PSP, you could return. If it had dead pixels. So
yeah, and even though people will say, "Oh, you know, there's been all these problems with the Switch," and there are some people who say, "Oh, well, the Xbox 360 had teething problems," to put it lightly. But at least Microsoft, they extended everyone's warranties and they were accepting returns for like 3 or 4 years after the launch of the 360. Whereas Nintendo are just kind of trying to brush it under the carpet and deny there's any problems.
Got to be honest, Ross, my Atari Lynx 2 does have a couple of dead pixels. However, I think it's safe because it's 25 years old, isn't it?
I think I don't know if the warranty will still cover that, Tom.
I might try and send it back to Sunnyvale and see if they'll swap it for a new one.
Atari Lynx, that's one of my biggest gaming regrets, is selling that to Cash Converters back in the day.
No.
Huge collection. I must have come away with about £15, but I had about 20 games. In my misspent youth.
On the subject of regrets, I've got a similar situation. I used to have a Virtual Boy, and I sold that to a guy in the back of the paper for, I think it was about 40 quid. And then I went into Manchester, where I was living at the time, and bought Mystical Ninja starring Goemon for the N64 with my £40. And then now look at how much that Virtual Boys are worth. It's like, oh my God, there's about 5 games with it as well.
How much would you get for Goemon now then?
Oh God, about 3 quid. If that. That said, it did have an amazing intro with that song and everything, you know, the sort of weird kind of, it wasn't pre-rendered obviously because it was N64, but it had like the in-game engine doing like the graphics. It was quite cool. So yeah, go and check out the intro to Mystical Ninja starring Goemon, or not. Right, let's move on. We're talking about new stuff that's been released for the Dreamcast. This is new in a sense. This is the Fluygen Brothers DLC, which has been released, and this is in part due to the hard work of a friend of the junkyard, a man named PC Wizard, again, not his birth name, but on his website, Dreamcast Live, which is all to do with the online aspect. It's quite cool how like DC Gaga is all about like the Japanese side of things, and then you've got like Dreamcast Live, which is all about like the online side of things, and then you've got, well, Dreamcast Junkyard is kind of tries to do everything, but not very well. but yeah, Dreamcast Live basically focus all about online stuff. So getting online, gaming online, browsing the internet, Dream Pie, all that kind of stuff. And then obviously now they're focusing on DLC. And Fluygen Brothers had the DLC apparently locked on the disc. If you don't know what Fluygen Brothers is, I apologise. I've kind of jumped the gun a bit. But it's basically a game where you play as these two brothers called Heugel and Meugel Fluygen. I don't know who came up with that, but yeah, it must have been a good good development meeting. Yeah, it's just like, let's call them these names, Heugel and Meugel. Yeah, that sounds good. So yeah, they live in this junkyard and you have to do loads of mini games. It's quite an interesting game. It's got really good graphics actually. And apparently the game that was released was called Episode 1, and apparently there were going to be like Episode 2 and Episode 3. Maybe if the Dreamcast had lived longer than it did, then there would have been. But they planned all this DLC for it, so every month a new item would be unlocked for you to download onto your character, so like hats and just incidental things like in the game world. And it was kind of never released to the public, as it were, because the Dreamcast was cancelled by Sega and the online stuff was kind of chucked in the bin along with everything else. But yeah, as I say, PC Wizard, with the help of the original developers of Fluygen Brothers, have managed to unlock all this DLC and make it available for people to download.
In hindsight, they probably should have just used the onboard clock, really, shouldn't they?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Did you guys ever download any like DLC for your Dreamcast back in the day?
Yes, Sonic Adventure I did. There was Halloween, and I can't even remember. I just remember Halloween. There are a few others. Also, I don't know if it was DLC, but I remember on Phantasy Star Online, on certain holidays, there'd be characters dressed as Santa or something like that, yeah.
I think, yeah, there was a thing with the internal clock as well on Ready to Rumble, where you could, when it was Halloween, you'd have like pumpkin heads in the crowd, or on Christmas Day, you'd have like Santa Claus like outfits in the crowd, that kind of thing. As far as DLC goes, though, I can't really remember, apart from the Sonic Adventure thing that you mentioned.
Yeah, I can't remember. I'm sure really remember there were much, a couple of us, but I can't remember any now.
I used that DLC, actually, when I first came to Japan. They had a few remaining arcades with Marvel vs. Capcom 2 with the VMU slot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you could take your VMU, and that was actually the only way to unlock all of the secret characters in Marvel vs. Capcom 2 until they released the fighting fan disc that came with Capcom versus SNK2. So that was kind of cool. They actually had the Dreamcast controllers as well, hooked up to, I don't know why you'd want to use a Dreamcast controller in an arcade as opposed to the arcade stick, but they had that, you know. That was really cool.
How were they hooked up? Were they just like going into the back of the cabinet, or were they like hanging out the front, or what?
They're actually hardwired in. You couldn't take them out. I think it was also available to Street Fighter 03 as well. They had that as well, yeah, the controller. So I don't know why you would want to use the Dreamcast controller, but you could do.
Yeah, you can do it now. You can buy the kits on, like, people have made them themselves. You can buy the kits on Yahoo Auctions. Like, it's like a converter or connector that goes into a Dreamcast controller and then goes into the back of the Naomi. But like they said, there's so few games you can actually use it on. It's a bit... And the games you can use it on, it's like, why would I want to? I think it's just kind of cool so that you can still use the VMU features, but there's not really much point these days. Just a nice little novelty.
Speaking of DLC, we were chatting about something just before we started recording. We were talking about the online service for the Dreamcast in Japan. I was actually reading this on your site, Jamie, on DC Gaga, about the Mega Drive and the PC Engine games.
Yeah.
Download onto your Dreamcast from by using the Premier Disc or Dream Passport 3.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of conflicting information about this, and the article that you've written is probably one of the best that explains how it actually works. I think a lot of people have misconstrued that Dream Passport 3. In fact, we've actually even said that on this podcast like many issues ago, episodes ago even, about the fact that Dream Passport 3 has this emulator on it. I don't actually think it does. I think it was just a gateway to get these games, you know, from the service. But can you explain a little bit about what I'm talking about?
So it was basically, it was open for a few years actually after the Dreamcast declined as well. It was an online service similar to like something like a PSN or something, where you just go on and you could purchase some games. They would stay on your VMU for a certain amount until the Dreamcast was switched off. It wouldn't actually save permanently. It was a temporary download. But yeah, you could play some Mega Drive games and a few PC Engine games as well.
Yeah, I was looking at your article. Wasn't that there were like 45 Mega Drive games and 43 PC Engine games? So quite a lot of games, really. And as you say, it was kind of stored in the flash memory or something on the Dreamcast. So then when you turn it off, it disappeared, and you had to re-download it again if you turn it back on again.
That's right. There was talk. Do you remember the zip drive they were looking at creating?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, that was going to be like a permanent, like, kind of save base for that. But like you said, it never actually came out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. When you think about it, it actually all fits together quite well.
I just held it in RAM, right? So, I mean, you've got 16 megabytes of RAM. That's more than enough for most PC Engine games, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, and also according to your article, Jamie, it kind of ran till like 2003, so quite a while after the Dreamcast.
The information I found in Japanese, I don't think I linked the source possibly, but it was available till, you know, Dreamcast kind of declined in 2001 in Japan, so it kept going for a couple of years really.
I'm just looking at the article now. It's called Dream Library. The service.
That's right.
The image you've got on there, is that one you made yourself, of the virtual console style thing with the TV and everything? Sorry, this is quite a long time ago that you wrote this article.
Let me just see if I can get it up.
But you say that the actual emulator's not on the disc. The emulator itself isn't on the disc, you don't think?
I don't actually know. There's a lot of conflicting information that the emulator was either on the disc or it isn't, you know, and it's, I don't know. Could it be a browser-based emulator, maybe?
I doubt it, but I don't know, but I thought they'd found the Mega Drive emulator on the disc, no? Some hackers or something.
Yeah, I think it was a similar, you know, there was that, was it Sega Collection or something came out in the US for the Dreamcast?
Smashback.
Oh, Smashback.
Yeah. Sorry, Smashback. I think it was probably like that. It's probably a basic emulator or something that's stored don't know, stored the emulator on there. I'm not sure, but you needed to go online to download the ROMs themselves. And like I said, it's saved to the Dreamcast's RAM.
Hmm. Obviously, we're just kind of spitballing here. We've not got the actual facts. I'm sure somebody listening to this will be able to tell us exactly. But as far as I know, the PC Engine emulator, if there is one on the disc, hasn't actually been taken from the disc yet. Nobody's been able to extract it, as far as I'm aware.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. If we're wrong, then obviously please do tell us in the nicest possible way.
But well, it seems a lot on a. Well, I suppose they did have broadband as well, but to download the emulator and the ROM and just store it temporarily in RAM, I don't. It just seems like a strange way to go about it, but I don't know.
Well, moving on to our next minor topic of discussion, I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of Japanese-centric oddities, of which that is one, the Dream Library. Do you remember, Jamie, several years ago, I actually contacted you asking you about a karaoke unit because I was desperate to get one. And you can't get them in the UK, you know, for love nor money. And if they do come up on eBay, they're really expensive, even though they're actually useless these days. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about Japanese-centric peripherals and add-ons for the Dreamcast, because you've got stuff like, obviously, the Dream Eye.
Yeah.
You've got things like, the karaoke unit. And even this very fascinating thing that I discovered in part through your site again, but also in part through just, like, you know, browsing and going down Wikipedia rabbit holes, which is called the Internet Starter Kit for Housewives. And I just find that to be such a fascinating and antiquated thing that, you know, can you imagine if Sony released that now in 2017, how much of a backlash there would be on, like, social media? How can they think that housewives need their own internet guide, you know? I believe you've got one. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got one. That's actually one of my favourite. I love the box art. They've got this, like, little Japanese kid eating noodles on the box. Yeah, it's fascinating that it had all these ideas for the Dreamcast as this kind of, you know, all-encompassing home entertainment system. And one of the things was this internet kit for housewives. Like I said, I remember inside the manual there's like basic information about what is the internet, basically, the Dream Passport itself is kind of dumbed down. It's very simple, the menus,
so simple even a woman could understand it.
Exactly. Even a Japanese woman could understand it, is what they say. So it's a custom version of the Passport 3, but it's slightly different. It's got, like, audio prompts, like, please click here and stuff like that.
That's really fascinating. I mean, because after seeing that on DC Gaga, I asked Ross if he could buy one for me from Yahoo Auctions in Japan, because they're relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
But don't they come with, like, a mouse mat and a keyboard and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, they do. They're just very heavy to ship, so that you end up, it costs a fortune to ship. Yeah. Because there's so many little instruction books and stuff.
I went to send it to Tom 2 weeks ago now, actually. And it was 2,050 grams, and anything under 2 kilograms you can send really cheaply, or 2 kilograms under. But I was 50 grams over, so what I'm gonna have to do is take out the mouse and send the mouse separately, and way it'll be a bit cheaper. But it goes up, like, if it's 2 kilograms, it will probably cost off the top of my head I can't remember, but probably less than a tenner. But then if it goes over that 2 kilograms, it's like 30 quid or 35-40 quid or something ridiculous.
No, don't do that. on this subject as well, I'm very fascinated in the way that Sega were actually positioning the Dreamcast as this kind of like an entertainment but also communications hub for the home. Because in Japan, obviously, they had, as I said earlier, you've got the karaoke unit, you've got the Dream Eye, all these weird and wonderful services that we just didn't get in the UK or in the States. One of them, again, talking about the online services, Dreamcast, you had this, is it called Dream Map? Which would show you where on a map where other people in your location were based, who also had a Dreamcast, which I think is quite an interesting thing to have, especially in, like, the late 90s.
Like Tinder for Dreamcast.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I mean, because with the PS Vita, you've got that near thing where you can kind of see if there's people around you who've got a Vita and, like, what they're playing and that kind of thing. Obviously, nobody uses near because it's just a load of rubbish. But I think having that system way back in, like, the late 90s in Japan, where you could kind of log on, click on Dream Map, and it would show you how many people in your locality have also got a Dreamcast.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a bit creepy, but it's quite cool as well. Yeah, so if you look in the manuals for a lot of these peripherals, it shows the Dreamcast set up with this karaoke unit attached to it. It's got the Dream Eye on top of the TV. You've got people doing, like, video chats, and you could send each other flyers with that Dream Flyer thing, you know, sending each other postcards and things. It's just like, yeah, why wouldn't you want to be involved in this console when that's the kind of stuff that they were positioning it to be able to do? It's fascinating, really. Did you guys ever... I know you've done a video on Dream Flyer, haven't you, Jamie? I'm pretty sure I saw one.
I used the Dream Eye. I've looked at that. I did a feature... basically what you can do, like the edit features and stuff. You can take a picture and then upload it to your Dreamcast and add like Dreamcast stickers and things like that. Another cool feature that you can do is you can upload images into Jet Set Radio through that. Picture and then that can be your graffiti kind of thing.
That's cool, yeah.
It's kind of a cool concept that still really hasn't been done.
I know Aaron, one of the other guys who writes for the site, he did a series of videos way back when we first started doing the blog, where he looked at the Dream Eye, and I think he recorded part of his video on the Dream Eye itself, and just to show the quality of the footage.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, I did note as well though that in the on the subject of Jet Set Radio, in the PS Vita version, you can actually access the camera and take photos of stuff, and then use that as graffiti in the game, which. I didn't even know you could do that until I was messing about in the options and just messing around with the graffiti creator. But that's quite an interesting little additional thing that you can do in that.
Obviously, that's where they've seen that what happened with the Dreamcast, how that they tried to implement that, and they've used the same idea there, which is cool.
I keep meaning to go. There's a bridge near where I live, which is full of graffiti, and there's loads of graffiti underneath, and like it's like a skate park. And I was going to go down there with my Vita and take some pictures of like real life graffiti and put them into the game. But then I thought, there's probably no point. just use the graffiti that's in the game. So that's a nice thing to do. You've got the Vita version. Are there any other Japanese only peripherals that you can think of that are really cool but just weren't released anywhere else? I know there was things like the train control. I know you've got one of those, haven't you, Ross? The Ben Shady Go trailer.
That was the first thing that came to mind when you said that, the train controller. There's only one game you can use it on, but it's kind of fun. It's more difficult than you'd expect as well.
Yeah. There's also the thing that Mike's got, which is is it Dream Power or something like that? You basically dance and it like you have like these like beams of laser that come up from the floor and you can move your hands.
I've got
around.
The PS2 version because it's completely worthless, but it's the same thing. It's quite odd that one. It wasn't an official release, was it? It was made in China. I think I read or heard. Quite odd.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah. There's also the Dance Music Revolution. Yeah,
Dance Revolution. Yeah, I actually got that on eBay a couple of weeks ago. I've still not even tried it for £1. It was the game. Second mix and two dance mats for £1 with free postage. It's the best bargain I've ever had for the Dreamcast, and so I need to try that very soon.
I've got a Pop and Music Dreamcast controller, and I've also got a Pop and Music control panel from an arcade machine. Quite near me, there's a like an arcade like warehouse, they sell and repair arcade machines and stuff. And I went in there and I bought a few things, and I was like, oh, how much for that Pop and Music control panel? And they were just, oh, you can have it, and they just gave it me for free. And it's not even enough room for it in the house. It's outside at the moment, but it's like covered by the rain. But I've been planning to, because I don't have the PCB or whatever for Pop and Music. But I was one of those projects would probably never get done. But someday I'm going to try to wire it up to take apart the Dreamcast one and wire it up to that and have the full control panel for Pop and Music. I thought that'd be kind of cool.
Someday. The reason I wanted to just briefly touch on this topic is that we did we had like a little thread in the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook group where I basically asked people if they've got anything that's like rare or uncommon or just like a unique item that they might have in their collection that maybe nobody else has got, because there's so much like bespoke stuff around the Dreamcast. I just wanted to see what people had, being a bit nosy really, and I created an article about it for the main blog. But yeah, the Facebook group responded like massively with all this like really cool stuff. You've got Shenmue Timex watches, the one that Ryo uses in the game. A guy who got his Dreamcast kiosk signed by the Angry Video Game Nerd. There's so much really like
the
MIDI.
You
cool...
see the MIDI cable thing.
The MIDI cable. Yeah,
I knew.
Yeah,
I didn't even know there was one of those for Dreamcast. I knew there was one for the Saturn because I had it. I had this loose cable in some bundle at one point, and I can't remember which group. It was a Sega group. I put it up and I was like, "What is this thing?" And someone said it was like the MIDI cable. I think you're supposed to be able to connect it into like a keyboard or something.
Keyboards.
Yeah. I didn't even know one existed for the Dreamcast until I saw that.
There's also the I love this one. It's called the DreamWire. It's like an ISDN cable that is out and is available, but it's so rare and common like God knows how many of them were made, but if you search for it, there's very little information on it. There's like one photo of the box. It looks like the, you know, the broadband adapter box. And it just says on it Dreamwire, HKT, whatever the number is. Can't remember now off the top of my head. But yeah, apparently it was for connecting to ISDN lines or something. But there's very little information about what it actually is, but that's one of the more uncommon cables for the Dreamcast. Can't believe we're talking about cables for the Dreamcast. But there's so many weird and wonderful ones. One thing I want to get as well, I think you're after one as well, Ross, is the, is it the link cable, the Tizen
I've
cable?
I've been after one for ages, even in Japan. I've caught a couple, you know, it is one of those items. Like, there's a lot of people say stuff like, there's a lot of games, things like Pan's Dragon Saga, and things. People say they're rare. They're not really that rare. They're valuable. But if you go on eBay right now, there'll probably be 30 copies of Panzer Dragoon Saga on ever sale. But that link cable is genuinely rare. Like, you probably, if you were to search on eBay right now, you probably can't find one. And even on Yahoo auctions in Japan, it's like periodically every few months one comes up. It's not easy to get. And when they do come up, at least the ones I've tried to bid on, they've gone for ridiculous prices, even more than I'd be willing to pay.
Even the third-party ones are really, really expensive, aren't they? Uncommon. Dragon, yeah. And do you know what? The only reason I want one, really, is not just to have it and put it on a shelf. It's just because when we do these events, I really wanted to have Ferrari F355 set up, you know, on two Dreamcasts, so people could race against each other.
Me too. I have these game nights at my apartment every month, and I love, like, these obscure multiplayer games, like stuff like 10-player Bomberman or Pac-Man Verse, which is like 4-player and one person's playing on the Game Boy Advance. I've got 2 Steel Battalion controllers, and I'd love to get them up with 2 Xboxes on a LAN someday. So yeah, I love that kind of thing, but it's just too expensive because there's people just, I suppose that's life, hoarding. But there's people hoarding them probably on their shelf, never use it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Dreamcast NTSC oddities. There are plenty out there, and they're all amazing.
Yeah, if I could get one, and it's one that I had a chance to get back in the day for around $500, and I pass it up, is the Divers Dreamcast.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I would love one of them, but they're just skyrocketed in price now.
Yeah, there's a guy who I know, his name's Garen. He's in the group. He's got one, and it's complete mint in box, everything. We've got, even with all like the cellophane and stuff inside the box, and it just looks amazing. And he keeps threatening to get out and send me some pictures. Or I just want to see the boot screens and how the internal menus and everything look.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this, Garen, get on it. I want to see some pictures. anyway, guys, we've been rambling on for quite a while now, and I think it's time to draw this one to a close. Before we go, though, I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who listens and downloads and leaves reviews on iTunes, and also to those people who support the podcast and the site on Patreon with just a $1 contribution. That's amazing of you, and I thank you for that. I'd like to thank Jamie, our guest of DC Gaga fame. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Any social media accounts that you want to give a shout out for, Jamie?
If you just want to get involved, like I said, please just type in DC Gaga on Google. We're doing a challenge this month. It's Capcom versus SNK challenge. You pick any 2 level 2 characters, see how many GPS points you can get, and please just let me know on social media. The winner, I might give them something very nice.
Excellent. No clues as to what that nice thing might be as yet, but it'll be nice.
It'll be nice.
and what about Twitter? What's your handle on Twitter?
Just Dreamcast Gaga. Dreamcast Gaga on Twitter, and Dreamcast Gaga on the old Facebook as well.
Excellent. Cool. Okay, Ross, you are also on Facebook. You can be found on the group lurking around. You don't do Twitter for some reason. Can I ask why that is?
I don't get the point in it. What is the point in Twitter? I don't know. I've never understood it.
Question.
I've
what
never understood
point?
What the point in Twitter is. Isn't it just Facebook, but only status? And a smaller status at that.
Yeah, it's like you can only write like 130 characters, but it's good for like sharing. It's good for like sharing links and stuff.
I haven't had to worry about only 130 characters since I was using SMS on a Nokia phone 15 years ago. I don't know. It's something I don't understand. Twitter.
Interestingly, the reason why it's 130 characters is because you used to be able to update your status on Twitter using a text message.
There you go.
And that's when it started. So that's why it's 130 characters. So there you go. Little bit of information for you there. Anyway, Ross isn't on Twitter, but I am. I'm at Tom Leesy, and we're also on Twitter as a collective at the DC Junkyard, and also on Facebook, just search Dreamcast Junkyard and you'll find us, and we have a group and a page, so feel free to like or whatever, comment, do whatever you like, really. that's enough from us, though. Again, massive thanks to our guest, Jamie, and we will see you on the next podcast. Everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye. We go.
Please stop this disc now.